And time to have a look at all of the things that are happening in the world of education. We do that with Professor John Fischetti. Now, he's normally in the studio with us, but he's off about to give a lecture. So he's decided to use us as a bit of a warm-up back today. Good morning, John. We're talking today about some of the trends in teacher education. What are some of the current trends you can tell us about?
Yeah, good morning, Mark. You know, that teacher education is one of those ping-pong balls that gets knocked around when governments can't figure out how to get the economy right. We tend to put the blame on new teachers, which seems a funny way to go, but for the last decade or so, new teacher education's been on the firing line, and there's several different trends in New South Wales and around the country that have come to us.
Okay, now I have mentioned to me just before we started this morning that there are some new but not so new things that have been put into the teaching of teachers. Can you tell us about some of those?
Yeah, the new requirements? So just in the last 2 years in New South Wales, under the effort that's called Great Teaching Inspired Learning, that's hit the K-12 schools as well as university teacher ed, we've had to ensure that our first-year students all meet requirements coming in, which is that they have 3 band 5s on their HSCs coming out of high school, and one of those needs to be in English. And that's an attempt to raise the level of colleagues who might be coming into teaching. It's a little fuzzy what you do with those who come in mature age, which are 40% of our students at the University of Newcastle, but we have to find that they've done something else since high school if they didn't have those HSCs, which is a year of TAFE, maybe an enabling program or a special pathway. But that characteristic makes sense, right? Let's have highly qualified students. The only disadvantage is there's no evidence that if you had 2 band 5s or 4 band 5s but not in English, that you're any better or worse a teacher. So it's sort of just a flash in the pan idea. But we've been able to comply with that, and all around the state, all universities now have that entrance requirement or ask students to do a different pathway into teacher ed.
John,
That's a pretty dramatic one.
It is, for sure. Now, you did mention that the bar's a little bit different for mature age students who may not have been, would not have been in high school for such a while. Is there a clear-cut way for them forward at this stage, or is it still a bit up in the air?
The good news is, for many of them, they've done alternative kind of training. They have a year or two of experience. They might have worked in a setting which has the opportunity for us to look at that. And also, we're able to put them in a pathway, if they don't have any of those things, that gives them the chance to show they can pass their first-year courses, and then they can move straight to the second year with no interruption. The real intent of that is that everybody's ready to do uni work. And the former Minister Piccoli had put that in place. And so now all universities are doing that. But it does put a good considerable portion of early childhood and primary teachers, candidates, in jeopardy of admission all around the state. We've been able to work around it. And it's probably a good thing. It's just a little bit arbitrary in terms of whether that means you're a good teacher or not, is because you had 3 band 5s. A funny characteristic is we have an increasing number of math and science students, which is what we need more of. And a lot of times they have the 3 band 5s, but they got those in math or science, maybe not in English. And it could actually discourage people from coming into those disciplines. So we've had to work hard to make sure that those students didn't get chased away from teaching.
Gee, that is tricky, isn't it? Because like you said, we need maths and science people, so therefore they've thrown all their effort into maths and science type subjects, but they haven't, you know, they've got to keep the English up as well. So what a balancing
act. They had band 6s in math and science, but then they had a band 4 in English. It doesn't mean they wouldn't be a great math teacher. In addition, they've just added a national test of literacy and numeracy at the end of our programs. It's called the Lantite. It's a test for initial teacher education in literacy and numeracy. And the good news is that was put on, although it's an inconvenience for our students, we have over a 93% pass rate. It's looking like virtually all of our students have done really well on the second time if they didn't quite make it the first. And so although the fear was that many teachers are leaving without the basic literacy and numeracy skills, those fears were really just rumors. It's in fact turning out that most of our students are doing quite well and are considering the test just a mini hurdle, not a huge wall in front of them. Because we hate to get through a 4-year degree and think that our students couldn't pass a basic test of literacy and numeracy.
Well, you'd think
so, wouldn't
you? And,
there's 2 more efforts coming at us this year because they didn't get enough runs at us. So the next one is related to showing that in addition to the academic qualifications coming in, that our candidates have non-academic qualifications for teaching. Those would be things like they work well together with others, that their ability to stand in front of students as necessary, that they can come on Thursday, not just Monday, because teachers tend to have to work the week. So non-academic qualifications, and we're now being asked on how we're going to verify those. And the last one that's coming along is at the end of the program, to sort of prove you can teach, taking a final unit that you teach in your school placement and putting that in a package that will be assessed by experts. So it's an sort of an authentic teacher performance appraisal. And that TPA is the national trend as well. So you see a mix of national and state agendas, don't you, which you're getting a little confusing in terms of who really is in charge of education.
Well, that brings me to my final point, John. You mentioned that it seems to be the bar is a little bit different in each state. Do you think we should just bite the bullet and say, you know what, we have one standard that goes from Darwin to Hobart, and that's what we have? Or do you sort of think every state should still mandate its own priorities?
Well, I think in curriculum we could say that for sure, because algebra is probably in Darwin the same as in Hobart. But if you really look at the running of the schools, that is a state or territory edict. It does blur the lines when it becomes a national agenda, so that's for smarter people than me to sort out. But right now, the federal department and AITSL, the standards authority for governing teaching in the country, are exerting more power, and you're going to see this sort of state, territory versus federal debate go forward, because I'm not sure it's going to be settled without a major kind of discussion that happens nationally. Who really runs our schools and our teachers? Is it the states and territories, or is it the feds?
John, that is a greater question. Good news for you, though. I have recorded our discussion this morning. You don't have to go to your lecture and present. We're just going to send this to them.
Oh, no, they might like to see me. All right, thank you, Mark. Bye.